it's very important, not only in dance, but in life, to continue to look at each day through a new lens or try a different approach. When something isn't working, try something else. And I really feel like cultivating that idea of reinvestigation is what is going to make us better at conflict resolution all across the board.
The voice you just heard belongs to Jacqueline Brown.
My name is Jacqueline Brown, and I am a dancer with Repertory Dance Theater, and this is my 6th season with them, although it's kind of a strange end to the season. And yeah, I am almost 30 years old. I have a family. I've been married for 7 years, almost 8 years, and I have a 2.5-year-old daughter. So that's a little bit about me.
Who joined me to answer all my questions about RDT and her dance style and journey. I'm your host, Liz Christensen, and it's all in the telling. Welcome to episode 35 with my guest, Jacqueline Brown. In the intro, you heard that Jacqueline had a baby in the middle of her professional career. To hear all about that unique experience and how it affected her body and her contract and her insights into her expressive work, check out In the Telling's bonus content on YouTube.
Who are you as a dancer?
That's a fun question. So I feel like as a dancer, I am not the traditional woman, perhaps. So especially in the classical modern work that we do, there is sort of an aesthetic for a woman who's very dainty and very light and just, womanly. And my aesthetic has always been like strength. Like, I love to keep up with the boys. When we go across the floor, I love to try to jump as high as them and do all the parts that they do. I love learning their parts on the side of the stage. I just love that kind of energy. And so that's been really interesting for me to tackle, because although we do contemporary works that are really good for that type of energy, it's been difficult for me in the classical modern works because it's just a little bit more of a traditional setting, if you will, energetically, for a woman to be partnered with a man who is doing things for her. And I like to do things for myself. And so I tend to possibly thrive more in like solo environments where I can be on my own and stand my own ground and tell my own story. Although, of course, everybody loves to partner. So that's, I guess, a little bit about me and what you can expect to see.
What's your training journey been? How did you get to RDT?
So I started, that's such a long journey, but I started dancing when I was 3 in a small town. I lived in the country. It was a very, very small town, Roosevelt, Utah. That training, I soon began to realize, wasn't going to be enough if I wanted to be a professional dancer, which, as strange as it sounds, I knew like when I was like 12 or 13 that, this is what I want to do. It's so weird that a young child can understand that, but I really knew like, this is what makes me happy. This is what I want to do. This is my calling. So I decided that I needed to seek out better training. And so the closest place that had better training or was a better studio was in Heber. And that was 1.5 hours away from my home. So as soon as I got my learner's permit, my mom started driving me back and forth. It was like every day in the summer for 4 days. Whoa. And we would just take class at the studio to make sure it was a good fit. We decided it was a good fit. They had a much heavier concentration on classical ballet, which is what I needed. I lacked technique. As soon as I got my license, I actually moved away from my family and I lived with a host family in Heber so that I could pursue my training. So I transferred high schools and I did my junior and senior year there with this really rigorous studio that was mainly ballet. So I went from kind of like competition, contemporary stuff, not really a lot of technique, small town like pom-pom, to classical ballet where we were doing full-length ballets. I was doing variations on point. And then a teacher that I had there was a dancer on Odyssey Dance Theater, and I was interested in them. And so she kind of got me set up with an audition, and I auditioned for them, and I actually got an apprenticeship with them. So I did that for the first year out of high school. So then that was really different because their work is really like commercial. So I went from ballet to kind of more commercial, and it wasn't a good fit. Like, it was my first job. I was 18 and I decided that I just wanted to go to school. So then I left that job and I went to UVU, which is the most wonderful college program ever. I love them so much. I can't say enough good things about UVU's dance program. But went through that program. That's where I found Angie, who danced on the company for, I think, 18 years with Repertory Dance Theater. And so she made that connection for me with RDT. I started going to all of their summer intensives, would see all of their shows, would write my concert critique on it. And I was just amazed at the breadth of work that they did, because they didn't just do one style. There were multiple styles that spanned generations that they were doing. So yeah, I auditioned over and over. They hired me as soon as I got my degree, and the rest is history.
Talk to me about the breadth of what RDT does, because as a repertory company, by definition, they recycle, but they restage works that have been previously done. What is the unifying factor for what makes it an RDT repertoire and what doesn't make you into RDT repertoire?
So that's really interesting. Our mission is like to preserve dance history. So anything that we think is of value and that needs to be preserved and that perhaps other companies cannot afford to do or maybe don't see as a priority, we take that into our repertory. So we are really trying to cover the last 100 years of modern dance and make sure that it's preserved so that this new generation of dancers can see the timeline of how dance has evolved and where they've come from to better understand where we're going as a dance community. You know, we try to be versatile. There are things that Linda likes more, like perhaps more classical modern stuff is her jam. She really likes Jose Limón work, Doris Humphrey work, Paul Taylor, Martha Graham, those classical modern dance pioneers. And that's really important to her with her lineage through Virginia Tanner up at the U. It's important to her to preserve that. And I feel that other people, like maybe the younger generation of dancers, maybe Nick Sendes, who's our artistic associate, I believe, is pushing for us to also have that contemporary. So we do a lot of the Gaga-based stuff. And I guess what really makes an RDT piece a piece is just the relationships that we continue to nurture with the same choreographers. So we have had the same Gaga-based artists come to set work on us multiple times. We have had the same person come and teach Jose Limón, like Nina Watt has come for years and years and years, decades, to teach the Jose Limón. So we just nurture these relationships with these people and we continue to work with them. And that's why you see the same kinds of work showing up in our rep, because we enjoy working with these same people.
If I can like draw an academic parallel to it, it sounds a lot like kind of getting as close to a primary source as you can.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Nina Watt was hand selected by Jose Limón out of college, actually, which is a really fascinating story because he's like the person you read about in textbooks. And here he was, he plucked her out when she was very, very young, and she danced. She's been with them for 40 plus years. So she is very close to the source, the closest to the source. And each time we do a Jose Limón work, we get a certified letter from the Jose Limón company saying, you're doing this right. It's close to the source. Congratulations. Here's your name on a piece of paper to make it official, kind of thing. So I'm very confident that we do the best that we can to stay close to the source.
You do restage works, and I know that you have been a rehearsal director before. What does that mean for people who come from like a theater background or a film background?
Yeah.
That what is that job?
So it's really interesting because when RDT began, it was ran as more of a democracy. And then it's gone through phases where certain people have been in charge. And now the company is sort of running itself. I mean, we have a bunch of company members who have been around, majority of us, for 6, 7, 8 years. So we don't really have much need for people to be coming down from the office and running a rehearsal because we're efficient enough. We know enough about the work. We're educated enough that we can put up works ourselves. Their time may be better spent writing grants in the office or doing these other things. So what they do is they choose a person who they feel is closest to the source, and they delegate that piece of work to them and say, you guys are going to set this together, but this person has the final say, basically. So that's kind of how a temporary rehearsal director position works. And it will shift from me to other people in the company. But I've been around long enough now that I've had the opportunity to do it several times because we've recycled these works, like you were kind of saying, where we performed a piece 4 years ago, and now that piece is coming back. And I'm one of the only people who has performed that piece, and everybody else left the company. So I'm closest to the source because I had that previous experience, and it's my job to share that experience with the new people.
Are you often in the performance as well when you're the rehearsal director?
Normally always. Yeah. It's just a way to kind of, I don't want to say cut corners, but delegate. They have a lot on their plate. And so I'm acting as a performer. And then if they can, and it's an honor and a privilege really to be able to be the one to say, oh, I'm going to reset Daniel Agami's theater piece. And so I'm happy to do it. Yeah, it's interesting though, because we are with our peers. So, you know, it's difficult to navigate. We're all on the same playing field and we all respect each other until somebody has to have the final say. So it's been interesting trying to respect everybody's opinion, but still kind of not develop too much of a hierarchy and respect each other. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. But still have that like final edit.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, exactly.
How are you, how do you assess yourself as a dancer? This is maybe a two-part question.
Oh, I love
when
it.
When you are having to edit yourself, either in a solo thing that you are creating or a piece where you're the rehearsal director, but you're also in it, what kind of feedback are you looking for?
Yeah, that's really difficult when you're in the piece. Of course, we do use outside eyes. So generally what will happen is, say I'm setting Daniel Agami's theater piece, which is the most recent one that I've set. And I will get a certain amount of time to set that piece. So I think I spent 1 week, maybe 2 weeks. It's about a 12 to 15 minute piece. And so I had the time on my own, nobody else looking. And then I present the final product to a rehearsal director such as Linda or Nick. And then they say, really good, but I have a question about this. And they'll relay that information generally through me rather than to everyone publicly. They'll say, okay, we noticed that this is happening. I seem to remember it being like this. So I'm kind of that liaison in a way, but there is somebody else there who's watching and saying, okay, I don't really think that you're doing it right. So it's not just me who's in charge of telling me that I'm doing something wrong. Before anything hits the stage, Linda's going to be down in the studio with us and making sure that all the loose ends are tied up and that we look clean and crisp and ready to go.
Well, I would assume that in some of your solo work, you are choreographing yourself.
Yes.
How are you? Yeah.
That's really difficult. Choreographing on yourself is difficult. I like to not a lot of the times because of that problem. It's problematic because you can't really see. But I mean, obviously video is a great tool. If you're filming yourself and you're able to watch the playback, it's not the same as a live performance, but you can get a good idea about how ideas are registering, if they're effective and if they're working. But when I have been in my pieces in the past, I always have somebody come and look at a rehearsal. I'll have like a temporary showing where people will come and they'll say, not things specifically about me, but they'll discuss my ideas and my through line of thought, much like writing. And they'll say, this transition doesn't really make sense to me. Or why are you mentioning this? It's all very confusing. Or they'll say, yeah, very, very clear ideas that you present. You do this structure, A, B, A. So it's really important to have people to bounce your ideas off of, so that you can make sure that you're getting across what you want to get across. So I would never choreograph something on myself and not have somebody to bounce it off of in that second opinion or third or fourth opinion too.
As a storytelling podcast, I'm really interested in the structure that you just mentioned in terms of like ABA, because mm-hmm. I think dance, when I consume it as an audience member, often seems to me to be kind of divided quite clearly into plot-based storytelling and evocative, abstract, either emotional or intellectual, and not often something that I can clearly see like a blend or a variation of. So what kind of structures are you working with?
That's a really interesting question, because I often get that feedback with modern dance that it's sort of elusive and that people do not enjoy that and that it frustrates them because they want to either, like ballet will give you a very sure plot. You can even look in the program and it will say Juliet meets Romeo, and then they walk across the stage and they're gesturing and they're doing this caricature thing. So people like that. A lot of people like that because they want to be told what to think and, you know, what to do and what to see and what they should understand about it. And then there's the other side of things, which I think you're talking about is more like dance theater, where it's like, they're clearly just kind of improvising, working with these very abstract ideas, and they don't want me to get it. And so there's those two ends of the spectrum. And in between is where I'm interested in playing, because you want to give people something to hold on to. And so it could be anything memorable, recognizable, like a simple gesture, like a wave. Everybody understands the gesture that is a wave. So you incorporate these humanistic gestures into your movement, and they also have an emotion attached to them. So people can then relate and come on that journey with you. And I sometimes find that more of that dance theater type of stuff isn't relatable because they're not incorporating maybe humanistic characteristics into their work. They're just kind of movement for movement's sake. As far as I go, I am a more structured type of choreographer. I just created a piece on my husband and I that was simple walking for most of it, and we walked different pathways on the floor. But think about how many different ways you can interpret a walk. I mean, it's still interesting. It's an age-old idea, but it's still interesting. And even my husband, who is a non-dancer, can enjoy exploring with that. And so you can walk in a commanding, you're coming here with me type of way. You can walk in a lazy kind of way, or like a stroll through the park. So it is fun to play with structure, in my opinion, and to bring the audience along with you, and sometimes even just let them sit back and enjoy. I feel when there is structure, it's easier for the audience to sit back and be like, I understand this. It's lighthearted. It's easy. They're drawing patterns on the floor. Great. I'm just going to enjoy.
As a dancer where your instrument is you, what are you doing to train and care for and keep your instrument good and ready?
During this time specifically?
Let's do both. Because I would imagine that it looks pretty different.
Yeah. You know, it's hard because when we are working on contract, it's actually pretty difficult to get that cross training in, because I mean, I live 30 minutes away from the studio. I leave my house by 8. I don't get home until 5, and I have a daughter and a family. So it's really hard to fit all of that in. And it's actually been a really great pleasure during quarantine time to be able to always get that in, all that cross training. So I don't know if I mentioned this to you or not, but I am a certified personal trainer. So I'm really into fitness, and not just like, oh, I do bar or like kind of movement-based stuff like yoga. Like, I like to lift weights. I like to do squats and heavy lifting and all that kind of stuff. So it's been really fun for me to spend like at least an hour a day doing workouts. And I like to film them, put them on social media. People hold me accountable. I have discussions about nutrition. I'm also working towards my certified nutrition specialist certification. There's that whole other side of fitness that maybe isn't as elegant and beautiful as dance and artistic, but it's still important nonetheless, because what we do with RDT is very endurance-based and strength-based. I mean, I am lifting men. It's not always them lifting me. I lift them, and we have dances where we will be dancing for 20 minutes straight, and some of that will be running, you know? So it's important to me to have both strength training and endurance training, like more cardio sessions. I'm lucky because I have a big living room. So I am able to take advantage of a lot of these online classes that are happening. Luckily, I can just give myself class, so I don't really have to wait around for like a scheduled class or pay for a class. I just open up my notebook of RDT classes that I've always taught, and I just pull from the RDT vitamins or basics that we call. So there's like certain exercises that I'm like, okay, I know that I haven't articulated my spine in a while, so I probably should try to find my spinal joints and articulate through those. So there are definitely basic vitamins that I'm trying to take every day in the form of different exercises to keep my body fine-tuned, because working out and dancing is not the same. So you do have to sort of approach them very differently and do both of them consistently. So
you said vitamins, but that articulating through the spine, and my brain instantly went to like piano scales. Is that kind of the basis?
Absolutely. I mean, think about, I was a musician. I played the violin for like 10 years. And what do you do to warm up? You do scales, you do arpeggios, you do certain things, octaves, you know, that you're singing to warm up, right? And so if you are a wonderful pianist and you're playing Mozart, I mean, is basically, if you break it down, it's just a bunch of scales, right? And so you have to always make sure that you're focusing on those basics because then when you go to do these wonderfully complex things like the dances that we do, or Mozart when you're playing the piano, you're not as crisp, you're not as tuned into where that note is. And it's the same with our body. You know, you have to be tuned into where my hip is when I lift my leg, because it is your body and you have to make sure that you're treating it in a healthful way. Like, I can't just kick my leg up. I need to make sure that anatomically things are happening correctly so that I'm not going to be injuring myself. Whereas the piano, you make a mistake and it's like, oh, okay, whatever. We still make mistakes, but it does affect our bodies in a different way. So sure. It's interesting how the body is the instrument and that changes things a little bit.
I never really thought of it as a parallel with the piano, but yeah, if I misplay a note on the piano, I didn't break my piano.
Yeah.
To play the wrong note.
Yeah. But you know, the more that you practice just those simple skills, the less likely you are to be, you know, making mistakes. And so it's important that we continue to rehearse doing that so that that muscle memory is staying intact for when I do go back into the studio. Who knows how quickly I'm going to have to jump back into some of our repertory and how complicated it will be. I mean, we might have a show that we have to take on tour a month later, you know? So that's not a lot of time to make sure that you're jumping back in and jumping in safely. So it is important at this time that we're doing those things.
How much of what you're talking about in terms of like the basics is really what you mean by technique? When you say, I didn't have technique, I needed to learn my technique.
Personally, I feel like this is a little bit blurred, because what happened historically is ballet was very codified. Very, very codified. It was like, you stand with your feet in this position, and I don't care if your hips are different from your hips, you're both standing in this position kind of thing. And if you don't have this 180 degree turnout, well, sorry, you're just not meant for dance kind of thing. So modern dance, when it came along, it was more like, we're going to take our shoes off and we're going to put these togas on and we're going to dance how we want to. So I hesitate to say that it's as codified, because it's not as ballet, but there are these, as we were talking about modern dance pioneers like Doris Humphrey and Jose Limon, that we train in their techniques extensively. It's just a little bit, I feel, more forgiving on the body. So for example, Doris Humphrey, her whole idea was about fall and recovery and how that's a natural rhythm of life. And so instead of you have to lift your leg here, whether you like it or not, it was like everybody falls differently, but there is a right way to do it elegantly and beautifully and artistically. So those are the sort of things I'm talking about. I do certain Jose Limon exercises, or I'll do what we call a drop swing to kind of feel momentum and to tune back into that dynamic change in the use of weight and the use of air and breathing and how that informs what you're doing. So those are the sort of vitamins that we talk about in modern dance. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, definitely. There's this quote that I pulled from one of the things that you sent me.
Oh, okay.
And I didn't put it in my notes where I pulled it from, so I apologize. But you said, you used the word reinvestigated when you were talking about describing a dance piece well.
Mm-hmm.
Or when you dance a piece well live, what mm-hmm. you've done is you've reinvestigated it. And I wanted you to elaborate on what you meant by that idea.
I'm a type A personality, and everything in my life is black and white, and dance is the only place where that doesn't happen. And I really enjoy that gray area. And so what I mean by that is there's a lot of structure in our lives. We get up, we brush our teeth, we do the same routine. And at dance and at work, it's no different. We do these dances all the time. So we sometimes are rehearsing these dances. Like, there are some dances I've probably danced hundreds of times. And so this reinvestigation does become important so that you continue to discover things. Otherwise, why are you repeating the same thing over and over again? It's that artistic side of things. So I guess what I was trying to explain there is you should never dance a piece the same way twice. Because what good does that do you? It's just more interesting. Anybody can get up on stage and you can tell them what to do. But that's not what people are looking for, and that's not what they pay to see. They pay to see you pour your heart out onto the stage and what you bring to the table specifically as an individual and how that differs from them or how they can relate to that. Continuing to reach out and discover the diversity that's out there so that you can reach more people through the art form as well.
When you're reinvestigating what things are variables and what things are like, no, this has to be this way.
So standing on one leg, I will definitely say like, I'm not about to be like, oh, how can I make this different? Because I mean, that's why you repeat things, right? Because there are certain things you need to nail and that are difficult and that you just have to literally focus on. I'm standing on one leg and you can't think about the emotional side of it all the time. So that's why we practice it so consistently. But there are certain landmarks throughout a piece where I'm like, okay, that lift went well. Now I'm going to go over here and I'm going to do my thing and I'm going to give myself some freedom here. But okay, now this is a group moment. And so I don't get that freedom anymore. Especially when you're working with a group, it's important that you're in tune with them and that you're not off on your own path. We need to have our paths coincide at certain times throughout the dance. And in certain dances, that may be a lot. There may be a lot of opportunity. In other dances, not so much. Dances where people are very specific about what they want and they don't want you commenting on their work. So that's kind of our job to determine is how much freedom. I don't want to say, am I allowed, but should I give myself to respect this choreographer's wishes? So it's an interesting balance. It's interesting because I've been a dancer for so long. Like it's been almost 27 years that I've been doing this. And I still just marvel at how hard it is to put it into words, how complex and how difficult it is to explain to somebody else. You know, it's just, it's a wonderful ever-changing thing. And that's why it never gets old.
Why is dance education valuable? Let's say specifically for non-dancers, non-professional dancers.
I mean, I think dance has its role in everyone's life, whether or not you're even interested in dance or if you want to be professional or if you just want to dance leisurely, there is a place for it. I mean, first of all, we all have a body. We all have that in common. So dancing is something good for your body. It's something creative for your mind and it's nurturing you. It's physical movement. So even if you're not interested or perhaps you don't want to pursue it and it's just sort of a means to an end that you enjoy, that's okay because it involves creative problem solving, conflict resolution, all these ideas that are important just to the human race. And so I feel like dance is simply, it can just be a vehicle for you, for all of those discoveries that you need to innately as a human, you need to make those discoveries. And you can use dance to do that or you cannot. But obviously I think dance is good for everyone and everyone should choose to just at least ride in that vehicle for a moment and just see how it can open you up to these new ideas and how you can discover more about yourself. But specifically for people who are kind of on the fence, which maybe that's what the question you're kind of getting at, because, you know, I meet a lot of people like that through our outreach. Education outreach is people who are dancing and who are on the verge of maybe not so sure if I want to pursue this. And you know what? That's totally fine. Dance will serve its role for you in your life as long as you need it to, and then it won't. And I really just believe that the stage will keep calling you if you need it. And so for me, it has. Like there's been plenty of times that I wanted to stop or that I felt it wasn't necessary or it wasn't giving me what I needed, but there was still something in me that knew I had more to learn. So maybe for those people, dance has taught them what they need to learn and they're ready to move to a different vehicle in life and continue to learn those things.
I know about RDT because I dance and choreograph as part of my work in musical theater. RDT offers open houses twice a year where you can take a full day of dance classes on a huge variety of styles. I went to the last open house and tried flamenco, Bollywood, modern, and ballet, and loved my experience. I've seen some of the work RDT has presented to the public over the last 20-ish years. And since quarantine began, I've been so impressed with RDT's commitment to offer classes remotely and the education RDT brings into Utah's public schools.
You know, I am a Utah native, so I've lived here all of my life, and I've really underappreciated the lack of dance in other states. And here in Utah, we have a wonderful and beautiful environment happening where dance is even available in every high school. That's unheard of in other places. And RDT is such a wonderful organization because we are making sure that everybody has the opportunity to dance because we will do a lot of education outreach. We do a lot of outreach in the schools and we will be teaching like kindergartners, professional dancers. We'll be teaching kindergartners. When I was a kindergartner, I didn't have that opportunity. And it's so wonderful to be able to go in and start those wheels turning, those creativity wheels. They're moving at much earlier ages here in our state. And it's just so wonderful that we make that a priority, because a lot of other companies, they don't. And they are just performing. And it's like, look at me, I'm this big hot thing. Come and watch me perform. I'm so wonderful. And they're not giving back in the way that RDT is giving back to our community. We just had a meeting today actually with the company, and in years past, it's been our goal to reach 50,000 children in the schools. And this year, even despite all of the coronavirus stuff that happened, we still reached a goal of 41,000 kids this year that we've served. So it just feels so good to be able to not just worry about me and my own path in the dance world, but to continue that process of looking backward and kind of lifting up these people who are just starting their journey, who don't know where to go. RDT is the place for everyone, for young people who need creative movement classes right now. We're providing that to the college student that we go see on tour, and we do residencies at their university. I mean, we are really all about giving back to them. So I just thought that that was important to mention, because we've been around for 55 years now. This is our 55th anniversary, and I just love them so much.
Where do you think you're headed from here? I don't necessarily need like your 5-year plan and your 10-year plan, but like, what do you want to have happen for you with dance going forward?
You know, when I first started with RDT, I was not interested in teaching, which is, it sounds so strange to say, because it's such a big part of what we do. And RDT has given me a change of heart. I love to teach now. I would definitely see myself going to get my MFA so that I can teach at the university level. So usually that's a 2 or 3 year program. So when I wrap things up with RDT, I may still perform a bit of freelancing and other things, but I'm really interested in just like returning to my university and other universities and nurturing these upcoming artists to give them the information that they need to be successful. It's really so important to me. So that's what's in my sights next.
Thank you to my guest, Jacqueline Brown.
Jacqueline, I have really loved talking with you today. Thank you so much.
I've had so much fun. It was a wonderful opportunity. And, you know, it's really strange because there's not a lot going on in my life right now, you know, which is strange because there was so much going on. And now it's like not a lot of things to look forward to, but I really looked forward to this and just sharing about what I do and stepping out of my other roles for a minute. So thank you.
In the Telling has some fun interviews coming up. I've spoken lately with comic book creators, a prolific screenwriter, and an RDT choreographer. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss anything. You can find out more about In the Telling at LizzyLizzyLiz.com. Check out In the Telling podcast channel on YouTube for bonus content. Theme music by Gordon Vitas. In the Telling is hosted and produced by me, Liz Christensen. Thanks for listening.